Pat's Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
And welcome to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for joining us on this Wednesday morning. We do appreciate it. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line. That's the best way to get in touch with the program. Jam-packed show for you today. Coming up in about 30 minutes, State Representative Wes Allen running for Secretary of State. The current Secretary of State will follow him, John Merrill. A little bit of back and forth there over a database. We get into that as the program unfolds. House Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter will join us as well. I forgot to mention, we are broadcasting from the State House, and Leader Ledbetter is allowing us to use his office today. Yesterday, we want to give a big shout-out to Chris Elliott letting us use his office. We have moved downstairs, so that is that's kind of where things are today. And then at 11 o'clock hour, from SR Communications and the Brit for Alabama campaign, Sean Ross will join us, and we'll wrap it all up with United States Senator Tommy Tuberville. So that is a big, big, big show for you today. But joining us now, and he may or may not, he may have to depart for a moment or not. You know, there's a committee hearing, but we're lucky to get him while we can. State Senator Del Marsh joins us right now. It has a, what I'm told is the mother of all school choice bills proposed. Senator, good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, Jeff. I'm doing fine. Thank you.
Hey, thank you for coming on. So let's kick it off here. Tell us a little bit about the bill. How is this different than anything that's been tried in the past? And, where are we today?
The Parents' Choice Bill, Senate Bill 140, basically allows parents to take a portion of state tax dollars and move them anywhere they want to further their child's education. They can take the dollars to another public school, private school, parochial school, homeschool, virtual school, vocational school. It's wide open. It lets the parent get involved in the child's education and make decisions.
And that's something, to my surprise, in Alabama, and Republicans have had the legislature since 2011, that we were sitting here today, 11 years later, and we still haven't really tackled the school choice. Something that I think it's very popular among Republican voters, probably popular among some Democrat voters, and it just hasn't had the opportunity to come forward yet.
It's really popular across the board. 73% of Alabamians, I'm talking black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Republican, Democrat, they support 73% choice, and especially parents' choice. We passed the Accountability Act back in the 2010 era, and it's been very popular. Got over close to 4,000 students taking advantage of that. That's basically for failing schools, low-income families. This one's across the board. Everybody can participate. It phases in over 3 years. And parents who have interest in getting very involved in their child's education should really embrace this bill. Need to call your legislators about this bill. Let them know you support it. It's a chance here to really give choice to parents.
Well, and I know you've been asked this question repeatedly about this. Do you worry once it gets in the process, the sausage-making process, you start to see it water down some, and then ultimately you don't really have a strong school choice bill?
Yeah, and I refuse to let that happen. I've told my colleagues, I'll work with anybody. We'll work to make us a better piece of legislation. I've got a couple amendments I'll add today in committee, one from the Department of Education. Eric Mackey and I spoke about some testing. I've agreed to put that in there. I've got to let the bill stay strong. I've got to let it have a lot of flexibility for parents to take advantage of it. We are ranked last in education in the country, last. And yet we are third highest funded in the Southeastern Conference, what we put per pupil in the legislature. Since I've been here, since 2010 when I became pro tem, we've added another $2 billion to the state education budget. It's approaching $8 billion now. So we've done our part to put money into education, but part of reaching success in education, Jeff, is giving diversity and choice to parents. Nothing is more valuable than a parent taking an active role in the child's education. This is the ultimate active role that allows parents, if they want to literally get involved to the extent of laying out the curriculum for their child.
And I know the merits of school choice have been debated and debated, but really, what happens to the failing schools or the schools that lose pupils to other schools because they just the parents choose to send them somewhere else? I mean, is the hope that it is kind of a market system and that will encourage these lackluster schools to improve, and that gets kind of things where they need to be?
Yeah, anywhere you see school choice that has been adopted in states, in every case, the public system eventually does better. Competition is good. A free market, as you mentioned, is good. In this particular bill, these are state tax dollars we're talking about that can be transferred by the parents. So it's about $5,600. I know there's some reports that there's $6,500. The reality is, not all of the state dollars follow the child. 5,600 do. 25% of those state dollars stay with the existing system regardless. So that system basically, if it loses a student, has more per child to spend because the dollars left behind.
Well, something here, though, and we always talk about, I mean, we have record education budgets. We are spending more than we've ever spent before on education. And yet the struggle still seems to be 51st out of 50 states or whatever the poll they trot out to show you how the schools are, how education in Alabama struggles. But tell me, when we're talking about that, I mean, what went wrong? Why is it Alabama at least in the 40s are moderately better just based on what you guys have been able to accomplish thus far?
You know, I don't know what the total answer is. I've received a letter from Dr. Mackey actually last night, 4-page letter stipulating all the things the state school board has done to improve the situation. But at the end of the day, it's the scores. You mentioned, we're 50th in math, 46 in reading. ACT scores over the last 5 years have come down 1.5 on the average in Alabama. So all these things are going on. So what I'm saying is I'm an advocate for putting money in education. I mean, as I said, we've increased the education right. budget greatly in the last 10 years. At the same time, I think choice is important. I think that the getting the parents involved and adding competition will make everybody better. So I'm wanting to put more money into education. I just want more choice in education.
How do you get parents more involved? Because it occurs to me, I think at a certain point, at a certain level, there is this problem that it's a culture problem that parents don't want. Our parents, just for whatever reason, they got issues at home or whatever. They're not as involved in their children's education. And a lot of that is probably part of the problem, but doesn't necessarily lend itself. A government solution, I would say, probably isn't necessarily something you can really make that better, right?
No, you can't force parents to get involved. We all wish parents would get more involved, obviously. But what this bill does is encourages to get parents involved, which is what you want. Anything you can do to make them want to get involved, because they actually have control of directing these dollars to the education they think best suits their child. And here's the other thing, Jeff. I mean, you can put all the good programs and things out there.
Right.
Not everybody's going to take advantage of them, okay? But over time, we will educate our way out of this, because people who can take or want to take advantage of it, who before never had a choice because they didn't have the income stream, for instance, to move to a private school. Now they've got an income stream to make those choices. And over time, we will improve education. That's what we've got. This is a long-term solution. It's not going to happen overnight. But I hope the education community on the public side will understand the need to get the parents involved and to have more choices out there. That at the end of the day, what we should all care about is getting our children educated, our people educated, and increasing their quality of life.
Well, the opposition to this is going to be obviously the teachers' union and whatnot. But you find a lot of local school officials just that they don't like it. Administrators, superintendents, school boards, that they are really the political pulse that pushes back against us sometimes. How do you win those guys over?
Well, I don't know that you ever do. Today in the committee, we asked for a public hearing. Three entities asked that public hearing. You had an AEA, Associations of School Boards, and superintendents. Every piece of legislation, generally, that anything to do with school choice, I've yet to find them supportive. But I would ask them. I mean, this is an issue. Now, even some of my own colleagues, they have good systems. There are good systems in the state, don't get me wrong. But as a whole, by and large, we rank 50th in total education. So we have problems. So this goes beyond the district you represent. This is a statesman's issue. This is where you've got to stand up and say, okay, what is best for our state long term? And although I may not like it 100%, we've got to do whatever we can to improve the situation. I would hope that educators would take that position. I can't promise they will, but I'm not taking their money. There will be monies as we go forward that will be diverted into this type program. They won't control all the money, but every bit of money that's been going into education will still be going into education. It's just the difference with my bill is the bureaucrats will not control all of it. The parents will control a portion of it.
Well, isn't that a big part of it, though? This would be another accountability mechanism because it would empower parents to hold educators accountable. I mean, is it, you know, at some point that it is money that if you're not doing the work and you're not doing a good job, then, well, I'm going to send my kids somewhere else. That's $5,600 not going to your school. And how does that money spend? Is it capital improvements, or is it teacher salaries? I mean, really, where do they feel the most incentive to improve upon what they have right now?
Well, right now Alabama ranks, I think I mentioned earlier, third in revenue per child. We're behind North and South Carolina. We're above Tennessee, Florida, Georgia, all our surrounding states. If this legislation were passed and that money were to be transferred with the parent, and they'd all went to private schools or non-public schools, if that were the case, Alabama would still be third in spending per child.
Really?
Okay, so it doesn't affect our standing. Yes, there's somewhat less that goes to each school per child, but we're still third. There again, every bit of the money is still in education. It's just that it's not totally controlled by the bureaucrats and the education Department of Education. So there again, I mean, we've had growing education budgets every year. Their argument then becomes, well, the increase in education dollars, we want it all. We don't want to share it with anybody else. And I think that's short-sighted because we've got to solve this problem. We've got to get people involved in education. We've got to increase our grade scores. We've got to increase the ACT scores. It's going to affect the state negatively down the road with trying to bring in industries, especially high-tech industries, right, that need the workforce with the education levels they will require.
Well, that's just the point, right, that if Alabama were, let's just say, 5-10 positions higher on the state-by-state-by-state rankings, I mean, how much better off might the state be today in a big, big picture sense that, you know, as far as economics?
I apologize. Let me run take a vote in judiciary. Fill in for me. I'll be back, but I need to make this vote.
All right, that's fine. Senator Del Marsh there, we're talking education, and we're talking the school choice bill he has put forward. He is also a member of the judiciary. They are debating the constitutional carry bill today, I believe, and there's a bunch of law enforcement, but he is, by virtue of being on judiciary, has to vote on a bill to get it out of committee and then onto the floor. So we'll stand by for that. 251-343-0106. Let's get a break in here. Maybe by the time we get back from break, we can resume our conversation. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Can't say I got a whole lot of cares. I'm in the redneck Riviera. It's getting crazy. I'm getting hammered. Sitting right here. At the Florabama.
I fly a starship across the universe divide, and when I reach the other side, I'll find a place to rest my spirit if I can.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking with us on this Wednesday morning. We're live from the State House in Montgomery. You have one more show to do, and then we'll be back at the home base tomorrow, actually. But anyway, always good to be back in Montgomery when possible. Still waiting Del Marsh if he can make it back in time, then so be it. But I think we got the gist of it, his school choice bill. Let's go to text here. Tony says they're spending too much money on teachers that are not as qualified as they should be or don't try as hard as they should. That's my perspective after running as many kids as I have through the school system. Dave writes, well, we have public school in person in 50 years, 30 years. A lot of teachers, if they had their way, there would not be in-person learning. Bob writes, Jeff, if 5,200 EST, I'm not sure what to say there, goes with the child, dollars, and 2,500 stays with the school, then how does the school that the parents choose to make up the difference? That's a great question. Maybe we could get that in if Senator Marsh gets back in time from that committee hearing. Supporting religion will not improve education. Just that from Gene. You could say that, but there's a lot of people, I mean, that think the culture has changed to the degree when we've taken religion out of every element of the public sector, that things have gotten considerably worse. Now, I don't know, like when you used to have different standards and different things you could say in schools, was the education system better? I don't know how you would quantify that, how you could measure it. So much of the standardized testing and everything has changed over time. But it is a, I think, a valid argument. I would say that. Let's see here. And that doesn't mean that, you know, hey, we should have church and state mixed together. I get it. I get the church and state argument. But there are consequences to separating the two. And some would say they're positive consequences. Some would say they're negative consequences. Tim has a device that is around the waist that holds his pants up that will bring a D student up to a C-plus student very quickly. You can't fix everything with money. Well, I guess we could have a government school belt program, perhaps, or something. Something like that to make the world a better place, or at least the public schools in Alabama a better place. But the thing I find a problem with so much with the school choice is you're just leaving these schools behind. Maybe there is now an incentive to improve if parents are taking their kids out of school and put them in private schools. However, what do you do with that public school? How does it get better? What do you do there? What are the elements that are going to make it a better school? So there are questions. Once that child leaves the school and takes his dollar or his or her dollars with them, and you start accumulating those numbers, then where do you go from there? How does that improve? How does the existing school? Do they find religion and say, you know what, we're losing so many students, we got to do something right? You would hope that you wouldn't need to do that. But I guess that's in theory is what people are doing. But so much of it, we look at it from the school side of it. What about the taxpayer side of it? Are you getting what you deserve for the taxes that you paid? Are you sending your kid to a lousy school but having to pay high property taxes, having to pay state income tax or whatever. SSUT, yeah. Yeah, any of this money that's going to the Education Trust Fund, are we getting what we should be getting as a taxpayer? And I think maybe that sometimes we need to look at it from that side of it and not necessarily the public school side of it. But it's a two-way discussion. I get it. 251-343-0106. We'll get a break in here. This is a Jeff Porter Show on FM Talk 106.5.
I'm raising hell just like I did. He asked me how far
said Daddy just smiled. I'll never forget it. Daddy never was the Cadillac kind. He said some things just glitter and shine.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for sticking with us live at the Alabama State House, just across the street from the Capitol this morning. Big shout out to Nathaniel Ledbetter, the House Majority Leader, for allowing us to use his facilities. Still to come on the program this morning, Secretary of State John Merrill joins us in about a half hour. The aforementioned Nathaniel Ledbetter also in the 10 o'clock hour. 11 o'clock hour, Sean Ross, SR Communications, our usual Wednesday guest, will join us in person for the first time. And United States Senator Tommy Tuberville at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour. So a lot of reasons for you to stick around. Hopefully you can. But joining us now, very pleased to bring on my next guest. Always kind to come on this program when we invite him on. And running for Secretary of State, State Representative West Out of Troy, former Pike County probate judge. Representative, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning, Jeff. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. Well, first off, before we get into the pseudo controversy of the day, tell us a little bit of how's the campaign going.
Campaign's going well.
The field got a little more crowded last week, but this is how the politics goes. But how are you getting around the state? How are things?
Yeah, it has crowded, but hey, campaign's great. State's great people. We're enjoying staying on the road and going and talking to the voters at the retail side of things. And we're just taking our message of, I've got the experience and the passion in the election process as a former probate judge and now as a state legislator. We've stood up and protected our elections process in the state house, and we're looking to do more this session.
Well, I guess there's still time left to get some stuff in. Tell us, so earlier this week, you put out a release and you called on Alabama, or you pledged to take Alabama out of this ERIC database. Walk us through that a little bit. Okay. And why and what that means.
Okay. So let's make sure everybody understands what ERIC is. It's the Electronic Registration Information Center. It was started years ago by a bunch of leftists, okay?
Okay.
It was started in part by the Pew Charitable Trust, all right, and their funding partners. And you can go Google this. There's multiple media articles out there that you can go Google. You can go look it up. Their funding partners are Open Society, the foundation. Now, who is the Open Society Foundation? That's George Soros, okay? So it got started with George Soros money. So these leftists, and go look at who ran it early on, David Becker, he was an attorney, elections attorney, very liberal. Go Google his name. So I encourage you listeners to do that. So George Soros money got it going. All right. Now, even if that money's been spent and gone, the fact remains it got started with Soros money.
Right.
And so so that's first. And second, it's not a 50-state program.
Right.
Okay. It's not a 50-state program. It's a private entity. Nonprofit that this state and other states send personal information. That's the taxpayers of this state, their personal information to this leftist nonprofit private entity. Okay, so we're talking all the voters of Alabama every 60 days are getting a data dump from Alabama on personal information. We're talking driver's license, we're talking Social Security or partial Social Security numbers, email addresses, and goodness knows what else they're getting, okay? Not just those over 18, but we're talking those approaching voter age, so minors. Now, listen. Now, we can talk about a bunch of stuff, but giving minors information to some private leftist group, I'm not for that. I mean, this is not a true national cross-check program, all right? So that's where I've got the problem. That's where I've heard from residents of this state. They've got a big problem with that personal information. And in Alabama, we can police our own voter rolls right now. In Title 17, you can go and look at what the Department of Public Health and Vital Statistics do. They can send that information, and they are by law supposed to send it every month to these board of registrars to purge these individuals that have deceased and have died and get them off their voter rolls. So we can police ourselves here in Alabama. There's the National Change of Address run by the U.S. Postal Service.
Right.
That I believe last year we had a bill that took care of that and addressed that system to make us a part of that, and to where when people move out of state, we make sure our voter rolls are clean. And so it's very disturbing what we're hearing. We're still getting to the bottom of it, but I encourage everybody to Google it up and look at it. George Soros and his leftist group and the money that started it, and, you know, I understand that the current Secretary of State, that's his decision.
Right.
To get us in, Eric, and to do what he wants to do. But he's not running again. I am. And on day one, I'm going to start the process to suspend and withdraw Alabama from this Eric system. I mean, it's not a radical idea. Look at what Louisiana's doing.
Louisiana
their,
did it,
their
right,
current
yeah.
Secretary of State is in that process right now of suspending their membership and getting them out of this, because their citizens are concerned just like we are, not only for the personal information, but the taxpayer money going to pay the yearly annual fee of about $25,000. So he sees it. It's not a radical idea.
Well, let me ask you, when the Pew Charitable Trust and the Open Society or whatever the Soros group is named, what do you think they were trying to accomplish by setting up such a system?
Well, who knows what all they were trying to do is and set up some kind of system. I haven't talked to them. I don't know exactly what they were thinking.
It does raise red flags. What are they trying to accomplish here? Is there some kind of political aim or objective here? But just try to sit here and game plan this. What exactly are they? How are they trying to change our system of voting? Are they trying? Is this maybe they have a vision for a national database or something of that sort, and they were just trying to get the ball rolling? But what could it possibly be?
Well, the red flags certainly are going off. You know, my little antenna ran up on this one. Okay, and you look and you go back and you look at those media articles, and you look at all the articles that are out there, and you look at who started it, and you look at who funded it, George Soros. And you look at some of these other states that are part of it, it's mostly blue-leaning states, okay? So you just got to assume what you're up to. But here in Alabama, we can police what we do.
Right.
All right. And so that's what I'm going to do if elected Secretary of State. I'm going to start the process to suspend and withdraw us from Eric.
What would be a proper mechanism? So recently, not too long ago, I was registered to vote in Florida. We were living in Tallahassee. And I have recently re-registered. We bought a house in Fairhope, and I am now a registered voter in Alabama. How, or should it even be up to the states to be, how would you rectify that? How would you check to see, or how would Florida or whatever other state be able to check to see that, hey, this individual's registered in another state. We don't want him voting in two different places. What is a good mechanism, a good way to prevent that sort of arrangement from happening?
Now, first, let me speak to double voting, okay, which you kind of alluded to.
Right.
Last year, we took care of that
double
issue.
Voting, right.
Yeah.
It's against the law.
Representative Chris Blackshear brought that bill and to end the practice of double voting, or make sure that nobody could do it, okay? And but national change of address is where that starts. And I mentioned earlier, we had some legislation last year. I can't remember the representative that brought it or that sponsored it. But that's where it needs to start, is that national change of address.
So you fill out that form,
right,
then it sets up a mechanism.
Right.
And that is something
right.
better than this database, you would argue.
Right. Yeah. Listen, like I said before, we can police our own voter rolls. Jeff, it all starts with clean voter rolls to protect the republic, to protect our country, to make sure we've got good, strong elections, safe elections. It all starts with clean voter rolls. And what we're learning about this, and the deeper we get into it and investigate it and look at it, you know, it's troubling. And, you know, if I'm blessed enough to be the next Secretary of State, I'm going to get us out of it.
Now, Secretary Merrill says 1.3 million ineligible voters because of Eric's were removed from the voter rolls. Do you get to, can you have that same sort of, yeah, that same sort of success with a national change of address or would you consider that success? Huh? But whatever, would you have those same sort of statistics if you applied a different system, you think?
Well, all I can speak to is that right now Alabama's got good, strong laws in place to where we can manage our affairs without having to get involved with some leftist organization that was funded by George Soros and the Pew Charitable Trust. And that's what should be alarming and sending alarm bells off with individuals across our state.
And as current Secretary of State calls us cheap political points, how do you respond to that? You are running. Should he have weighed in here on this?
Well, I've got the experience as a former probate judge to run elections. When I step in that office, if I'm lucky enough and blessed enough to step in that office, there won't be no learning on the job.
Okay.
This is about protecting elections. I've got the experience of running elections. Listen, I know what it's like to get up and be at the courthouse on election day at 5:30. I know what it's like to appoint poll workers, train poll workers, proof ballots, print ballots, go to the precincts on election day, and run elections because I've done it. And I've got the experience and the passion to do it. You look at my legislative experience last year, I sponsored and passed the bill to permanently ban curbside voting to protect the secret ballot and to protect our chain of custody of our ballots. This year we've got a bill put forward that I'm sponsoring.
He's running for Secretary of State. Got just a few more minutes with him before we'll have to let him go. But beyond the Zuckerberg effort and trying to legislate with that, what else is there that could be done in the remainder of this legislative session that could make Alabama's elections more secure?
Yeah, thanks for that question. There will be another bill that I've introduced, that's going to make sure that people cannot get paid to help anybody fill out, deliver the application or the absentee ballot process. Now, if you want to help somebody, Jeff, out of the goodness of your heart, help somebody through that process, you by all means do that. But we are ending the practice of people getting paid to help folks fill out those absentee ballots.
Did we get a little too far off the rails? And this probably is a question you could apply nationally with all the COVID protocol and everything when it came to the elections that it got – The had states doing 50 different things, and that sort of maybe gave some agencies, some local counties here in Alabama, license to do some things with our election systems that were just a little too reckless.
Well, leadership starts at the top, and as the chief elections official, the Secretary of State, if I'm, like I said before, if I get elected, you know, I will work with these probate judges, circuit clerks, and these sheriffs and board of registrars and poll workers to administer our election laws on election day. And I'm going to get them everything that they need to be successful. And so that's going to be my goal. And I'm looking forward to helping them accomplish their goals in these individual counties because that's where it starts.
At that county level, are you the thing? And you would know, you're a probate judge. It does seem like you have different systems in place in these 67 different counties. You have clerks or you have probate judges. Should we ever come to more of a uniform system in this state where everything is kind of done the same way? Or are we?
We do have a uniform system.
Is it mm-hmm. done exactly the same way as we do from top to bottom?
Well, I mean, listen, when it comes to training poll workers, you've got a window of time to get those poll workers trained as a probate judge. When it comes to using the machine, those DS-200 machines, those tabulating machines, when it comes to ballot size, when it comes to all these things, we have a uniform system. And those probate judges and circuit clerks and sheriffs, you know, they're the ones that are on the front lines. And so I'm going to be there to support them. And let me just add this before I leave. It's not all about counting wins and what kind of legislation you pass, Jeff. A win is when you defeat terrible legislation. And let me just say, last year, as vice chair of the Constitution and Elections Committee in the House, I led the fight to defeat no-excuse absentee voting. And so we've got all kind of ideas out there and proposals that want to weaken our election laws. It's not about just what we pass, but it's about what we defeat to make sure these proposals do not weaken our election laws.
Representative, you've been very kind to make time for us this morning. We'll leave it there. Folks want to find out more about your campaign. Is there a place they can look?
Yeah, so you can find me all over social media, but electwesallen.com.
All right. State Representative Wes Allen, running for Secretary of State here in Alabama. We appreciate getting him on here. We got to get a break in here, working through some technical difficulties, but we'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5.
From Carolina down to Georgia, smell the jasmine and magnolia, sleepy sweet home, Alabama, Roll Tide, roll. Muddy water, Mississippi, blessed Graceland whispers to me.
And welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106. Coming up in the next segment, Secretary of State John Merrill will get his response to what you just heard. But there is a little bit of a back and forth between one of the front runners for Secretary of State, it Wes Allen, you just heard, and Secretary of State. He insists that the Wes Allen's claim about the ERIC database is not correct. So we'll hear from him in just a moment. Let's see here. Joshua says, I watched the Tucker YouTube thing on the Baltimore public school system being terrible. How does the Baltimore public schools beat the Alabama public school system in ranking? Does Baltimore beat, or does Maryland beat Alabama public school? I don't think you can make that comparison necessarily. The city of Baltimore has a big tax base. They have the same kind of problems, though. Inner cities are tough. So, but I think you'd be better off comparing Maryland and Alabama. Let's see here. Ron writes, a child's education should be a byproduct of parenting. My prayer is that somehow we emphasize that lessons for parents at every socioeconomic level. Well, it's tough because that may be a very worthy objective, but how feasible? You can't make people do things. Perhaps you could incentivize it, but I don't know that you can necessarily make people do things. Let's see here. Gene, Eric has not done anything wrong. Okay. Let's see here. Pete, Jeff probably can't see the text. I can't see the text today. But if that guy says George Soros, a Pew Charitable Trust, one more time, I'll slap myself. I mean, I get that George Soros is a boogeyman, but damn. Let's see here. Leo, say his name again. Tim. There we go. Thank you for letting me know that, Tim. Unnamed texture writes, good morning, Jeff. Regarding your previous guest in our education system, I would ask legislators to evaluate administrative salaries against teachers, support staff ratio is very disappointing. Secondly, students with learning disabilities are now required to be in general classes. This falsely impacts scores. Bill, a parent of current teacher. Well, I tell you what, Bill, I don't know how much the learning disability thing, perhaps, and you put, but do they test children with learning disabilities on these standardized tests the same way they would the normal average student? I don't think that they do. No, I'm not an expert on this. But you heard Senator Marsh talk a lot about ACT scores and how they're low. Well, ACT, isn't that college prep? Isn't that, that why you take the ACT? Does everybody go to a school of higher learning? It requires an ACT score. Even then, we're still struggling. These are people that are motivated to move on beyond the 12th grade. The administrative salaries against teacher support staff, I assume you think it's a little top heavy. We're paying superintendents, we're paying principals that they're paying more, and the teachers aren't getting paid a lot. But as far as I could tell, the teachers do all right. We've given them a lot of pay raises the last 3 years. So it remains to be seen. Look, I'll be honest with you. I just don't think government can throw money at this problem. there's got to be a way to do something with the culture and get parents more involved with their children's schooling. How do you do that? I think you got to improve economic conditions. How do you improve economic conditions if your schools are lousy? It's a real chicken egg problem. But just know this, guys. There's not a government solution for everything. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
Curtis Lowe was the finest pickup to ever play the blues.
Bucks Pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Porch Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Good morning. Welcome to the Jeff Porch Show. Hour number two underway. We do appreciate you listening. 251-343-0106. Broadcasting live from Montgomery today. House Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter, very nice to let us use a part of his office for today's broadcast. We are in the State House. Still to come on the program, the aforementioned Nathaniel Ledbetter will join us in about 30 minutes. Shaw Ross, SR Communications, our usual Wednesday guest in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll wrap it up with U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville joining us by phone. He'll be with us. You want to make sure you stay tuned for that. However, the man of the hour joining us now on a number of levels, I would say. But always a pleasure to bring him on. He's always very kind to come on this program. Secretary of State John Merrill with us here. Now, before we get into the politics and that, Auburn-Alabama game last night. You are, I would say, the true diehard Alabama fan, a booster of the university, not just the sidewalk alum that watches football, Secretary. You go to the gym meets. You go to the women's basketball games. I've seen you at the baseball games. You sit right there, front row at the basketball game, seen you there at Coleman Coliseum. And kind of are into the you're a subject in the middle of this Auburn-Alabama rivalry now. How does it feel?
Well, we kind of created a little firestorm with a response I had to a statement that was reported by Tom Green, who I now know is the AL.com beat writer for the Auburn family as far as covering Auburn athletics is concerned. And that resulted in a number of Auburn fans expressing their displeasure with my position about that particular statement that was made by one of the gymnasts after the victory that Auburn had on Friday night. Of course, it should be known that Alabama has won 118 gymnastics meets and Auburn's won three. Nice. I thought I was a little disappointed to see that interaction. Like she felt like they owned us, and I should have let it go, but I didn't show enough discipline, and so that's the reason I said what I did. And it's interesting because, you know, I haven't made any kind of wagers with Alabama or Auburn or anything like that in a long, long time. And I'm not sure I've shared this with you, but one of the things that I think some of your listeners would find interesting, when I was president of student body at Alabama, 1986-87, I called Robert Mond, who was the president of Auburn's SGA, and I said, let's make a bet on the game. And he said, well, what do you want to bet? I said, well, if Alabama wins, then you'll come to Denny Chimes and you'll sing Yay Alabama and you'll bring me a gallon of Toomer's Corner lemonade. I said, now, if Auburn wins, then I'll sing the Auburn fight song at Toomer's Corner and I'll bring you a slab of Dreamland ribs. And so going into the fourth quarter, Alabama was ahead 17-7. This was 1986, the year after the kick by Van Tiffin
kick.
So with about 1 minute and 30 seconds left, there was a young man named Lawyer Tillman who ran a reverse when Coach Dye was trying to call timeout and scored the go-ahead touchdown. And Auburn scored the first touchdown of that quarter, and they scored the last one. So they beat us 21-17. So the next week, my phone rang. It was Robert Mond. And I went down to Toomer's Corner. They blocked off the corner where the oaks are and everything. They blocked off that entire intersection. They had the entire Auburn University marching band out there. I got up on a van, put on an Auburn sweatshirt, and sang War Eagle, Fly Down the Field, Ever to Conquer, Never to Yield, War Eagle, Fearless and True, Fight on Your Orange and Blue, Go, 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 On to Victory, Strike Up the Band, Hit 'em High, Hit 'em Low, War Eagle, Fearless and True, Auburn, War Eagle. Now, look, they didn't like it because I didn't say, give them hell, give them help. But it wasn't in the words. And what I didn't really understand was I really did not know all the words to the fight song, even though I'd heard it pretty much all my life. So I got it, and I memorized them before I went up there. They weren't pleased, so they made me do it again. So I did. But now they still continue that tradition that we started in 1986, except they do it at the basketball game for the team that won the game annually. So, but that's how that got started. And I'm not even sure that you knew that or that many of your listeners
did. I did not know that. So I got to Auburn in 1994, but I remember it was, you know, I was in the marching band there for 2 years. I was in the pep band at the basketball. Played at the basketball games, men's and women's, and I knew about that. I thought it predated that, but I guess it is the brainchild of one Secretary of State John.
36 years, my friend, has been going on.
Well, that's a good streak there. The game last night, it's just Auburn's year, right?
Well, Auburn has got a tremendous team. I've seen them play in person twice. I did not go to the game last night. But I will tell you, they are for real. I knew that when I saw them the first time. I was at the UNA game that was at the Auburn Arena. And then I was obviously at the game in Tuscaloosa when they beat us by 4 there. And it's going to take a team's best game to beat Auburn. And they've got tremendous athletes and they've got tremendous coaching. They've got everything you want in a championship program.
One more Auburn Alabama question, just a purely political. You find when these guys go to Montgomery and they get into elected office, well, I cheer for both teams. I want to see both teams do really well. Are you one of those guys, because as an Auburn fan, unless it helps Auburn for Alabama to win, I want to see Alabama lose everything.
Coach, I'm for the University of Alabama. I was president of the University of Alabama Student Government Association. I'm a donor to the athletic program.
Do you ever want to, watching Auburn, what do you want to see?
I will say this, and you may or may not know this, because I don't know if we've ever talked about it, but one of the things that Cindy and I have done for the last 10 years is we go to at least one Auburn game at Jordan-Hare when Alabama's not playing at home or they have an open date. Most of the away games we go to, we went to every game this year in the entire nation except for the, including the loss of the national championship, except the Florida game. We did not go, but our son went to the Florida game in Gainesville. But I'm kind of like you. You know, if Auburn has a chance to help us with a victory, War Eagle.
Right.
You know, if they don't, I'm Roll Tide all the time. And people have said, well, look, they said, you know, they vote against you because you're for Alabama. I said, well, if they vote against me because I'm for Alabama, they'll find another reason to vote against me.
Well, I don't know that's necessarily the case anymore. We have a United States senator now that's a former Auburn football coach.
I voted for.
I think that Auburn-Alabama thing in politics is a little overblown, but maybe I'm wrong. The show goes on. Let's get into, speaking of controversies, our last guest, State Representative Wes Allen, was with us. He's running for your office now. This has kind of become a crowded field here in the last few days, post-qualifying. But the ERIC database, he insists, is something Alabama should not be a part of. He put out that release. He has some very strong feelings. The Pew Charitable Trust and George Soros initiated it, he says, and for that reason, Alabama just need to be a part of it. You take issue with that? You think that is more political than necessarily, something that is a net benefit? Kind of walk us through what your perspective on that ERIC database is.
Absolutely, Jeff. Thank you for asking the question. You know, the opportunity to have a cross-checking system for election participation through voter registration or through voting in a particular election cycle was created by Chris Kobach, who was the former Secretary of State in Kansas, two-term right. Secretary of State, who I know and I consider a friend. Many people in our state may remember Chris as being the architect of House Bill 56 that we passed in 2011 on immigration reform in the state of Alabama. But Chris started the Kansas Interstate Crosscheck, which was made up of 35-plus member states, took voter lists, compared voter list, see if there's duplicate names from different states at different times. There was no cost to participate in the process. But to enhance that effort, The Pew Charitable Trust had seven member states that wanted to start that process and do it in such a way that would enable them to compare existing voter rolls, but also participation in the same election cycle. So Colorado, Delaware, Maryland, Nevada, Utah, Virginia, and Washington were the ones, with the assistance of the Pew Charitable Trust, started the process. Now, they all contributed some financial resources, and now all the member states, 31 of them, the Director of Elections in the state of Alabama is on that board. I went to the very first meeting because, as the senior election official, my seat was given to me as my seat, but I assigned it to go to our Director of Elections. He goes to all the meetings. He goes to all the virtual meetings, wherever we hold them. I can tell you this. George Soros has never been to a meeting. George Soros has never had any communication with anybody associated with the ERIC system, the Electronic Registration Information Center, or any board members on the ERIC board about anything that's important to him or what he'd like to see done, and has made no financial contribution to ERIC at all. ERIC is funded by the member states for the purpose of promoting election integrity, security, and transparency.
So what would have been the Pew Charitable Trust? What would have been their
Well, reasoning? Let me say this. Yeah, one of the things about Pew is, and I don't know how much you know about Pew. Pew is an international organization that is designed to improve the quality of life, the quality of government services, the quality of our country and the countries that they're interacting with all across the world. And they like to establish projects. And so what will happen is they will have an idea about what needs to be the focus of a particular initiative, and then they will try to get people to buy into it. And that's what happened with this system, which is why they're no longer a part of it, but why they helped to start it, because they helped to coordinate the state coming together, provide seed money for that purpose, and then now it runs on its own autonomy as a separate standalone entity as the Electronic Registration Information Center. And I understand from some people George Soros is a contributor to Pew and to Pew initiatives from time to time. But he's not a part of this. He was not the reason this started. He's not the reason it continues today successfully. And he has nothing to do with us or anything to do with Alabama's elections.
Well, tell me this, though. You only have a handful of states to participate in the ERIC database?
Well, 31.
So
that's more than a handful.
Okay. Well,
but the most important thing to us, and this is the reason that it's so relevant to what we do, is that we have the ability now to compare our database and our voter registration rolls to Florida, to Georgia, to South Carolina, to North Carolina, to Mississippi, to the member states, that especially those that are around us. And in doing that, it's easy to see if we've got duplicate registrations or if we've got people participating in our state and another state in the same election cycle. And so we can give that attention. We've actually passed additional legislation because of our involvement in ERIC, and it has been introduced to us that people from Michigan, people from Iowa, people from Illinois, people from Louisiana, people from Mississippi that have property in Alabama, most right. notably in Orange Beach and Gulf Shores, have come down here and registered to vote and participate in the municipal contest, participate in initiatives for school board elections, for tax referendums and things of that nature while they're participating at home. But we could not prosecute those people. But now, because of legislation we passed, because that was introduced to us by our ERIC colleagues, we're able to pursue those people.
Can you hang out for one more segment with us? Yeah. Well, we're going to work in a break here. Like I said, still working through some technical issues, if you will. But we're joined by Secretary of State John Merrill, and trying to, you know, there's to kind of reset for you here, a back and forth between him and one of the candidates running for his office about a database. I meant to kind of check things, who's registered in what state, and make sure that you don't have duplicate registrations. Let's get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5.
There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows that the secret.
show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this, Thursday morning, 251-343-0106, if you would like to weigh in on anything we are discussing this morning. Still with us, Secretary of State John Merrill. Secretary, before we went to break, I was sitting up for this question. Let's tell me the change of address system, Representative Allen, he insists that a national change of address system to check the voter rolls when somebody moves would be superior. Now, I get it. Some people have dual properties, and that creates all kinds of questions, but there's a way to clear that up. Why wouldn't that be a preferred alternative to it, Eric?
It is a part of it. We already use that, Jeff. Actually, that's a tool that we have tried to utilize before. We first tried to pass that legislation 4 years ago. We're unsuccessful in being able to do so, but we passed it last year. It will actually save the state $1 million every 4 years when we use the national change of address mechanism. That is another tool. And that's the bigger point about this whole picture. ERIC is one tool that we use in order to make sure that we're doing everything we can to ensure the integrity of our voter rolls. And you know, you've heard me say this 1,000 times. Every time we're together, you ask me, give me a report on where we are. As of today, Alabama, since January 19, 2015, when I became the secretary, which is 7 years and 15 days ago, we've registered 1,979,999 new voters. As of today, we now have 3,620,969 registered voters. But ERIC and our other programs have helped us remove more than 1.35 million unqualified, ineligible voters from the voter rolls since we've been in office. We continue to use that tool. We'll use any tool available to us to ensure the integrity, transparency, and accountability of the elections process, because we're going to continue to work hard every day to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat in Alabama.
My wife practices law in Tallahassee, so we maintain a residence in Tallahassee, Florida. I also have a house in Fairhope, and I have registered to vote Baldwin County. That's where I vote. That's our home. It's going to be our home once we got to wrap down the
town. Claim that is your domicile.
Right. And when I get a letter, I got the card. Well, I had an apartment in Daphne, but until then I re-registered. Well, I did not. But when I get that little card in the mail from Secretary of State John Merrill about my voter registration, saying we our records detect that you have moved or you're registered to vote another. I mean, how does that process work? What database is being checked?
Yes, that also is a part of the process. And this is how we match that up, because, and this is one of the things that should be noted. We use the driver's license information that's available from the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency to compare it against our voter rolls and to send out cards to everybody that's got a driver's license in the state that's 18 years of age or older that's not a registered voter. And then we're validating and verifying participation in the elections process as well, which is how people get on the list to say I'm active or inactive as a voter, and then we know what their status is. So at that point, we're able to confirm whether or not they need to remain on the rolls or they need to be removed from the rolls, because that's a process. That doesn't just happen when you receive the notification back. There's a process in order to make sure that's being done effectively. And there are a number of other things that ERIC can use when they're sifting through our voter rolls and the other voter rolls, which they cannot share by contract with anybody else in the nation for any other purpose. But the Social Security Administration's death rolls, we know that they check that against it. Now, and the reason that's important is because even though we get monthly reports, and sometimes more frequent than that, from the Department of Medical Examiners for the state of Alabama, if you had a loved one that lived with y'all in Baldwin County and then they were down there in Florida, if they died in Florida, we wouldn't get that report from Alabama, because they died in Florida.
Florida, right.
We don't get that information from the state of Florida. So we would get it through ERIC because of our membership there. There's a number of things just like that that are a part of what we're talking about, but that Social Security Administration Death Master Index is very important. And our people cannot compare driver's license records with other states for the purpose of voter list maintenance either, but ERIC can do that, and they do it. That's why it's so important to maintain a relationship with them for this purpose. It's another tool.
Secretary, we're up against the break real quick. Give us a rundown of some stats and where folks can get in touch with
you. Yes, sir. And, of course, I just gave our voter numbers as of today. I will say that if someone wants to reach our office, they can call 334-242-7200. They can email me at john.merrill@sos.alabama.gov or call me on my cell at 334-328-2787.
Secretary, you're very kind to come on, and let's talk again soon.
Thank you, Jeff.
All right, guys, we got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, I was country.
Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for listening on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106. Still to come, Sean Ross will join us at the 11 o'clock hour, as well as U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville at the bottom of the 11 o'clock hour. So you want to stay tuned for that. As I said, 251-343-0106. I will get to your text at some point when we get the opportunity, so keep them coming. Anyway, enough of that. Joining us now on the program, very gracious to let us use his office whenever we are in Montgomery. We always appreciate it. And it's been a while since we've been able to do this. I probably haven't been able to do it since I've been on in Mobile, actually. But when I was at Huntsville, used it frequently. House Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter, we're at the State House, forgot to mention that, in Montgomery. But he joins us now from his office. Leader, how are you this morning?
I'm good, Jeff. It's good to have you back in Montgomery. It's kind of good to see things kind of maybe leveling back out some.
Well, this is one of those steps to normal, I feel.
Absolutely.
Like, you know,
yeah,
back in the State House and back in participating in the game here. Speaking of games, we were talking about that a little bit, and this is kind of something I've been asking all my guests today about the basketball game last night, but you got to go.
I did. It was an honor, I tell you. Some tremendous athletes, and there's no question in my mind that Auburn's the number one team in the country right now. If they can just stay healthy and keep doing what they're doing. I think Coach Pearl's done an outstanding job, and certainly knowing Coach Pearl, he's going to continue fighting hard to try to get that national championship. And Alabama played hard. They just being in Auburn's house and all the athletes they got, it was kind of a tough night for them. But it was enjoyable.
Well, Alabama's still a decent team. I mean, by historical standards and SEC basketball, it's not, you know, blue blood, you know, ACC or Big East or any of those. But it's a good team that will get into the tournament, I feel like.
I think so, too. I mean, if you think about it, looking back, they've beat three out of the final four teams that was in it last year. So
right.
I think that's a pretty good resume.
And beating Baylor and Gonzaga, you know, that's yeah. tough. Yeah. That's tough. Let's get on to the business of the day.
We just talk about sports. How about that? That'd be good.
I miss my calling being a sports talk show host. Look out, Feinbaum. Anyway, let's get into the news of the day here. Legislative session back underway. I guess a little housekeeping from ARPA and the special session last week. You feel good about how that hadn't gone?
I do. I think, you know, one thing we tried to do was make sure that we had all the members informed. I think we'd talked about that earlier, but we had caucus meeting with both the Republicans and the Democrats and had the folks that was over the department that was going to be receiving the funding there and was able to ask every question they had a chance to ask anything they wanted to ask. I think that really helped us, enable us to move the bill at a good pace. And it's certainly going to be beneficial to our state. You know, the water and sewer is certainly needed. We met yesterday with Kevin Lawrence and some of the people at Alabama Public Health Department about the issues that they have in the Black Belt and the sewer and Lowndes County in particular. And Ghost Turbleville asked me to kind of help him with some of those issues. And fortunate enough, we were able to put some money in ARPA funds to help some of that. I talked with Director Poole this morning and going to meet again next week to try to figure out how to utilize that money and put it where it needs to be.
You feel good about, you know, the, I guess ADEM and ADEC are going to handle a lot of the heavy lifting here. Do you feel good about those agencies' ability? I mean, this is federal money is always tricky, right?
Yeah.
And it comes with strings attached. But, I mean, they got, I would think, somewhat of a difficult task to make sure that it's done by the book.
Well, I think it is difficult, but a good thing about it is, you know, ADM's used to using federal funds.
Right.
So they know what they've got to do, and this isn't going to be any different. And I think, you know, they got a list of, that's worst of the worst, people that's really struggling with water and sewer, and I think that'll be some of the ones we'll work off of first. it's going to be a heavy lift. I mean, they're going to have to increase probably their number of folks over there to help the workload. ADECA's done an outstanding job already with the broadband issue. I mean, we started that program, I think, 3 years ago, and we've expanded across the state, picked up several thousand customers, and I think this is just a larger version of what we've been doing. And Director Boswell does an outstanding job. He and his staff, I commend them for what they've already done. So I think this is not going to be tough for them. I mean, they're ready. We worked 2 years ago to fund the money we needed for a map for the state that we desperately needed. Alabama's one of the only states in the country that's got that type of map. So I think they are ready. And they knew there would probably be more funding coming, whether it's through the ETF or infrastructure bill. But so I think they're ready, and I think we'll hit the ground running.
Well, let's move on past the special session. Here we are. It is back into regular session. That first week, you had some hearings and not a whole lot of floor business. But now it looks like the time to hit the ground running. Everybody's qualified for elections. All that sort of all the political elements may be somewhat behind us. There's still the election to come, obviously, the primaries, et cetera. But now you really get down to business. We expect things to kind of pick up here at a different pace.
I do. We'll go in today at, I think it's 3 or 3:30, and we've got a couple of bills on the calendar already today. Then we'll have a rules committee directly after we adjourn, and we'll pick a number of bills on the special order calendar. So I think we'll see a stronger pace starting this week, and it's only going to get heavier. I mean, you know, we've had because of the pandemic, we've had a lot of members that hadn't got to move legislation that they deserve to move and really would like to move. So I suspect we'd probably have over 1,000 bills filed this session. I don't know how many we'll get out. Hopefully, you know, an average would be we'll see 1,000 or better, and maybe we can pass 250 to 300 of them.
So that just assumes everything goes pretty much as you can schedule things, and you know.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the first 2 weeks of session, we come in, we had about 10 members that had COVID. The second week, it was about the same. Last week, I think we had two. So we're seeing a pretty dramatic decline, just in decline inside the state house. This week, we hadn't got anybody yet. So I think that if the trend holds up and continues to drop, I think we'll be able to get a full session in.
Well, let's walk through some of the hot button, big ticket things I think the legislature will be looking at. First off, constitutional carry. I know the sheriffs are down, but that he has a lot of co-sponsors on a bill. I think it's either Sorrell or Proxy Robertson or Shane Stringer. But this will be the year that we'll see some kind of permitless carry system, perhaps.
I think it's a good possibility. I mean, I think one thing that I applaud them on and applaud our members on, that they've been working on it. And I mean, it's still a work in progress. And certainly they've been meeting with the Sheriff's Association. They've been meeting with all the other factors and trying to put a piece of legislation together that everybody can live with. I know there's some of them not going to be happy with it.
Right.
I get that. But, you know, this is something that's been going on for a number of years. It's not like it just happened yesterday.
We had to get the database together, and then that kind of laid the foundation.
That's right. I think the database is very important. As a matter of fact, I think the database is going to improve law enforcement in general with what Leah's willing to do and what we can do on the data to make sure that when they stop people, they know if they're on there or not, if they're dangerous or not. So I certainly think that's going to be an added tool. And, you know, there's still been a lot of conversation about it. And, you know, it's come out of the Senate before, and they've got it in there this time. So we're trying to just make sure it's the best bill it can be.
And that's, you know, the trick for a lot of these bills, it seems, the Senate will pass a lot of bills, and they'll come to the House. And it is kind of a role reversal from what it's traditionally been, where the Senate was the more deliberative body and the House passed a lot of bills, but it seems to kind of flipped over. And I don't know what you might attribute that to, but the House does seem to be the more deliberative body, where for better or for worse, a lot of things probably are better off starting downstairs than they are upstairs.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I think we have become the more deliberate body over the period of the last few years, and I think that's got, you know, some of that's got to do with leadership. Speaker McCutcheon, he wants to make sure you get things right, and I applaud him for that. I mean, you know, sometimes we got some terrible bills that needs to be fixed, and some of them, they're good. I mean, we send terrible bills to them, too. It's not one-sided, and they have to fix. So, you know, everybody's got different ideas of how it should look like on any particular piece of legislation. So I think the more eyes look at it, the better chance there is of making it happen. I mean, like we talked about earlier, we'll have 1,000 bills probably and just pass probably 250 or 300. I mean, there's more ways to kill a bill or for a bill to die than there is for it to pass. And that's for a good reason, because there are always consequences in legislation, good or bad. There's always some type of consequences. It affects a lot of people. So I think from both chambers, I applaud Senator Reid. I think he's doing a great job. And Majority Leader Schofield, I really applaud their efforts. We have got a really good working relationship with him, and we'll continue to work the process.
Well, that fourth year of a quadrennium is always tricky. Now, you had the second year with COVID, it was abbreviated. As you said, you want to give a lot of your membership an opportunity to push some things that are important to their districts and their constituents. Is there any reason to think that maybe some of the things that would be big, like we got Senator Marsh's school choice bill, or we got gambling. I think Albritton's going to drop a bill. Is there any reason to think that something that big could get accomplished this year?
You know, that's a heavy lift. Both of those bills are going to be very heavy to lift. And, the thing I think, and you and I have talked about this before, the most success that we've had in legislation lately is when we all work together, be it the House, the Senate, and the governor's office. And we've done that on the ARPA funds. We did it on the prison bill. We have done it on some other bills. It's been very successful. And I think for us to be able to make heavy lifts like that, everybody's got to be at the table. And everybody's got to have input, and everybody's got to see the bill and make sure that it's going to be productive for our state. And, those may be. I'm not saying they're not, but I just think when you got heavy lifts like that, everybody needs to be at the table.
Because things like that, it would seem to me you need to have a more sizable chunk of time carved out to give everybody opportunity to say and work it through the process.
Well, and that was the sponsor come and talked to me yesterday about the Marsh bill, and I told her, I said, for a bill that changes our education system to Alabama to come out with 30, right now we've got 25 days to go in session, it's kind of late. And I think that bill's got to be vetted a lot. I mean, what's good for some areas may not be good for others. And I get what he's trying to do, and I applaud him for the effort. But, there's certain areas. My district is a good example of that. We would never use that, So I don't know that you take a shotgun approach to try to fix education. I think it's going to have to be more of a laser focus. That's my opinion.
Well, when you look at it, you can see where this bill might have some unintended consequences. So, for example, if you live in a place where the schools are relatively good and sound and people are happy with their education system, but now you have the school choice element opens up, does it open up the opportunity for a private school to come in or something of that sort just because now it's an option? Does it maybe there are some bad schools in Alabama, there's no question about it, but does it weaken good schools?
Well, I mean, anytime you move, and I hadn't seen the physical note yet, I asked her to bring it to me, and I know they're working on that. That's going to be tough to get the physical note. But I think anytime that you move what's probably going to be close to $500 million out of public schools, there's going to be consequences. And I think, trying to engage a mechanism that will make it work without hurting other schools is going to be tough to do in 25 days. That's my opinion.
Well, how do you, and this is more broadly, is there, you guys have given teacher pay raises. You put more money into the Education Trust Fund every year as a record budget. There's a lot of things the legislature has done to try to rectify this problem, yet still not quite there yet. Is it a cultural a problem, and there's maybe not necessarily a government solution? I mean, what if not school choice, if not, an illiteracy act, there's going to be a pause on it sounds like coming, if not things like that. I mean, what's left to be done to try to get schools operating at least at a higher ranking among the rest of the country?
Hey, I think that's a great question. If anything keeps me up at night, it's that, because it bothers me. I talked to the Chairman Garrett this morning about that very same thing. And just like I said earlier, I think we have got to change how we're doing it. I really do. I think, everything we've done has been a shotgun approach. We're going to splatter it up against the wall, maybe some of it to stick. I think we got a laser focus. We know where the problem is. We know that we got problems in poor areas. We know that we got problem in inner cities. We've got to do laser focus in those particular areas. We got to get more aides in those schools to try to help the kids. I mean, think about it. When you teach kids, there's three different levels. You got some at the highest level, some at the lowest, and some in the middle. And most teachers teach in the middle so they can try to capture both sides. But still, with that happening, the ones at the bottom gets further behind. So I think if we get especially in K-3, if we get aides in there that can help those kids keep up and maintain what they're learning, I think we can start seeing some changes. But I think it's things like that that we got to focus on those schools that's failing or is in tough situations financially. Well, we can go in and say, okay, what can we do to change this school? And I think I got a bill this year. It's a pilot. We're going to put it in some failing schools, and we're going to put an aid with K-3.
Right.
And I've talked to my superintendent, our city superintendent, which I think he's one of the best in the state, and he's told me he feels like that'll help fix some of the problems. So we're fixing to find out. We're going to put pilots out there and see if it does.
Well, it's more like micro-targeting, trying to isolate certain problems, right? And rather than redo the way, like you said, the way we do education in Alabama, and that just seems like an across the board. I mean, I hate to say it, and I see the merits of school choice as a good conservative. We're supposed to see that, but you do that. You're doing it to it's a top down approach. It is a one size fits all approach that becomes kind of the tricky situation there, that you could do harm in some places where you're doing good in others, but you still got to kind of figure out, well, what can we do? I think it's important to at least offer some solutions, right? And it becomes more of a, let's look at each, every system is different. Let's find out what's wrong in each individual system. Does the state have that ability?
I think we got to quit making excuses and create that ability. You know, I've had the opportunity to visit Cornerstone in Birmingham. They do an outstanding job, and that's part of the school choice. I've had the opportunity to visit Leeds Academy in Montgomery, and they do an outstanding job, and that's part of the school choice. And I think we've made strides in that, but to overhaul the education system at this late stage on the fourth year of the quadrennium with just 25 days to go worries me. And I don't know. I think we got a lot of conversation and a lot of talk to try to get there. But we'll see how it goes. I mean, you know, we may find out that there's merit to it, and it may be something that can be positive. But, I think we got to be real objective to see what's going to happen to our schools.
Leader, can you stay for one more segment?
Sure.
We'll hit. All right, guys, we're going to get a break in here, and we'll pick it up on the other side. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Wednesday morning. Still to come, Sean Ross joins us in the next segment, and United States Senator Tommy Tuberville joins us at the bottom of the hour, at 11 o'clock hour. You'll want to make sure you stay tuned for that. 251-343-0106. Still got a few more minutes here with House Majority Leader Nathaniel Ledbetter. Graciously, I would say, let us use his office once again. Always appreciative of that. It's a good spot, and it works out great for the show. Leader, getting back to what I wanted to hold you over just for one more segment here, gaming, and I know this is like a topic. It's an annual topic. You and I have discussed this for going on for years for now.
Yeah.
The last bill the Senate put down, you said it on the floor right at the close of session. It was just not tenable. It was not workable what the Senate had done. But looking at it and what McClendon and Marsh had done, they had tried to create the best deal possible, it seemed, with all the different players and the circumstances with the supermajority and you know, having to have a certain number of Democrats and just make it to get it through and done. And that seemed to be a non-starter for you and a lot of your colleagues in the House. Where should that conversation begin? Is it going to take help from the governor? Will we ever get on a place where we could put this issue to bed?
Yeah, I think there'll be a point in time where we will. You know, I don't know. I can't say when that is. I know I talked to Senator Albritton just a few minutes ago, actually, and it sounds like that they're going to drop that bill, as you said.
Right.
The one that we got it late in the session. And, you know, for us to get where we needed to be, it needed to have a lot of work done to it. The most important thing to me in that bill is being able to regulate it. Now, I think one thing that people has got to understand, and we've done a poor job explaining it, everybody talks about you're going to put gaming across the states, you're going to ruin our states, you're going to do this. the issue is in my area, of course, you don't see it, but we've already got probably 28, 27 facilities that's not being regulated. And I think the biggest thing that the House tried to do was make it an enforcement piece where it would be regulated statewide. And, of course, as you know, the governor's got the executive amendment signed. So those places can stay open. I think her and Attorney General is just waiting on us to do something, to be honest. And, again, I go back to what talking about, we all got to get on the same page. And, for me, of course, I'm not a gambler, but for me, the enforcement pieces is the biggest part. And I think that's something we've got to keep in there. And that's something before I could even have to go. That's important. And I think, we've had this bill a couple of different times. And I think each time we've had people, and it may even be better. I think sometimes it happens. I've had bills on the floor 3 or 4 times, and you finally are able to get them out. So we'll see how it goes.
Leader, been very kind to make time for us this morning. We were up against a break, but sure. Let's do this again real soon. It was really good.
It's good to have you here. Absolutely. You're welcome anytime, Jeff.
Thank you. All right, guys, we got to get a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Well, I'm going to miss her when I get home. Right now, I'm on this
way. Welcome back to the Jeff Horst Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for sticking with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106. Hit us up on that text line if you would like to weigh in on anything. Still from the State House and Montgomery, but we are very pleased to be joined by phone. U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville, as I like to call him, Coach. Coach, good morning. How you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeff. That's a great song, by the way. That's a good way to bring us in. You know, up here in D.C., you don't hear that song very often. But doing well. Just left a breakfast with some leaders from our ag group down in Alabama. They're up here for a leadership conference and had breakfast with them. Now heading to a conference with Secretary Austin, the Defense Department, and Secretary of State Blinken. Hopefully they'll give us some insight of all this mess that's going around the world and Ukraine and Afghanistan. So just another day up here on the hill.
Yeah, well, the Ukraine situation, talk me through that. You know, a lot of people think it's maybe a mountain being made out of molehill to distract from some of the other things going on. It seems like everything that sometimes the Biden administration does is a distraction. But what's your take on what's going on there?
Well, it's been very clumsily handled by the administration. And, you know, I hate to say that. You know, I'd love to say, man, they've done a great job. But they can't make a decision. And, you know, leadership is supposed to be in decision-making. And we seem to put things off and make things worse as time goes. You know, we've talked about this before. I was in Ukraine about 4 months ago and had lunch with President Zelensky over there. And he basically said then, you know, at that time, even, you know, they were losing hundreds a week from snipers, from Russians on the other side of the border. And it was a mess at that time. But since then, you know, Putin has put a lot of people on the border and made it worse. But he told us then, we just need support with maybe weapons and moral support. We don't need troops. You know, we want to defend our own country. And we just can't get that in their head. Hey, just help them out as the rest of the countries and stay out of the way and let happen what happens. But, you know, this administration tends to just drag its feet and matters gets worse.
Yeah, you know, and they send the wrong cues, I think, a lot of times, particularly while we got you talking on these issues, China and the China situation there, Olympics about to happen. Kind of give us an idea of your whole view on how that is being handled.
Well, you got to look at it in two ways. You know, Russia just wants to have status in the world, and they want to regain some of their land and be the old USSR. That's what Putin wants to do. China wants to control the world. And so you got two different scenarios that we've got to be on top of. And I was in Taiwan just a few months ago and had lunch with the president of Taiwan. And they've got problems. You know, China says that they Taiwan belongs to them. They're one of their parts of their republic. And Taiwan says, no, we're not. And so we'll see what happens after the Olympics. Obviously, there's not anything going to happen there, but just consistently, China flies jets over their country, and they get out of bounds with that. They have boats all around encircling their small island of a country, and I think there's 27 million people there. But the thing that they do is they control a lot, a very high number, Jeff, of the semiconductors, which go into cars and anything that has an on and off switch. And we buy a lot of them from them. And we've got to catch up in that area here in the country. But right now, we've got to help Taiwan be able to defend themselves.
Hey, one more question on China before we move on. It's just always this discussion about a kind of an odd relationship between the Biden family and China. And you got to wonder, like, is that influencing U.S. policy toward China? Does that maybe that make a calculation where they're going to take a different approach? Well, what do you think? That ought to warrant a congressional investigation at some point.
Well, there's no doubt about that. It should have already happened. There's no doubt that Hunter Biden, the son, traveled many times over to Ukraine and Hungary and a lot of the Eastern European countries, Russia, and made some business deals and was making money. And they hit it during the election. Now it's more of it's coming out. You don't know a lot of it about it right now. Hopefully there is some investigation. But, you know, when your dad's sitting president of the United States, everything moves very slowly, but it'll eventually come out. Things will shake out, but we're just hope it's not affecting the decisions made in the Biden administration when it comes to Russia, when it comes to Ukraine, when it comes to China. There does not need to be a conflict of interest there, because if it is, it could put not just some of those countries in harm's way, it could put us in harm's way. So hopefully we're making decisions for the right reasons.
Coach, let's move to something that hits a little closer to home here for us down in South Alabama. The cancellation of these offshore drilling contracts, and just everything the Biden administration has done has really put a lot of pressure, upward pressure, on fuel prices. And that has an impact on the economy as a whole. But maybe it's compounded here by when you start trying to cancel these contracts on federal land. I mean, it does have an impact on our neck of the woods.
Oh, it's going to be a big impact. And, you know, there's been a war on oils ever since Biden got in on January 20th last year. Prices have gone sky high. It affects everything that we do in this country. We could be energy independent as we were under Trump. We could be exporting oil, making money. But Biden has done just the opposite, closed our pipelines down. Now he's closing down 80 million acres of oil and gas leases in the Gulf of Mexico. And the state of Alabama gets residuals off of that gas and oil that comes out of the ground. So not just us, but Louisiana and Texas. It's just absolutely amazing how this guy can come in 1 year and pretty much single-handedly, on just the decisions he's made, destroy our energy supply. And it can't continue. If it does, it's going to put us in not just trouble in terms of economically, Jeff, it's going to hurt us with national security. This Ukraine deal is all about oil. It's all about oil and gas, you know, coming from the pipeline, the Nord Stream 2, to Germany. Germany is in NATO with us. They're close, supposed to be a close ally, but under President Trump, they let this go through. President Trump fought it every day, and now President Biden has allowed this pipeline to continue to run. He changed President Trump's orders, and so that's put us in a bind with Russia making money and us losing money here. And it's a sad state of affairs, just totally opposite of what any Republican decision would ever have been made about oil and gas. But they're all about climate change. They're all about some things that sometimes you can't figure it out. But and we're all about saving our country and the world. But when you're destroying it in other fashions, purposely, then something's got to be done.
Well, it's like you said, John Kerry has a big kind of role in influencing President Biden, it seems, and they may not publicly cheer what's going on with gasoline prices, but behind the scenes, this is kind of what they wanted. They wanted to push Americans away from gasoline and solar panels or whatever else, the alternative, so-called alternative energy policies they want to promote.
Yeah, these alternative energy policies are 5% of our energy supply. The rest of it's going to be nuclear, oil, gas, and it's not going to be wind and solar. You can't get enough energy from that. But it's just that you can't get it through their skulls that what they're doing is detrimental to everybody in this country and the free world. But they're pumping up Russia. They're pumping up China. They're pumping up Iran. They're over trying to make a deal with Iran right now and let them continue to make their nuclear bomb. They do that, it makes the whole world, a much scarier place. So there's a lot of things going on right now. John Kerry is an unelected official that was a senator here with Joe Biden. And John Kerry, I don't know what his motive is, but, somebody needs to be over there and speaking in American voice, with a huge American voice, with the taxpayers of this country, instead of for just a few people.
Last question, we'll get you out of here on this. I want to get your comment on Title IX and the way what the NCAA, what the Biden administration is doing, just flies in the face of that longstanding regulation with the transgender athletes. And you have some insight into this, having been a coach at a lot of different levels.
Oh yeah, 40 years I coached. You know, I saw women's athletics, girls' athletics, really boom. In the 70s when Title IX started and I started my coaching, only 3-5% of the high school girls actually participated in sports. Now we have a huge majority of the girls that play some kind of sports in high school, and it develops young women, and it gives them an opportunity to compete and earn scholarships. So there used to be not any scholarships for women's sports in colleges. Now it's gone up 60%. And it's just amazing what it's done for women and girls. And it gives them the opportunity to compete and grow and learn things. It was all men's sports was the only thing going until Title IX. Now, the same people that put Title IX together are the ones that are trying to let a handful of these young boys or young men say, I want to compete in women's sports. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. And the NCAA won't stand up and up for the young girls and the young women in these colleges. It's just absolutely insane what they're doing. And, if they want to play sports, have their own league. But we cannot allow them to tear Title IX down like they're going to if we continue to go in this direction. I'm really disappointed in the NCAA not making a decision on their own. They just kicked the can down the road. We don't want any lawsuits. Hey, you got to stand up for what you believe in. And NCAA used to believe in women's sports and men's sports and competition and fairness, but there's no fairness in this. You know, if you put a 170-pound kid out there and competing in the swimming pool against a 90-pound girl in women's sports, I mean, it's an obvious difference. Now, you can't get away from that. And I'm sick and tired of hearing about people making excuses. There's no excuse here. You're either boy or girl. Your body is different, and fairness needs to be in everything that we do, especially sports, where they learn a lot of different things.
Coach, you've been very kind to come on this morning, and I know you gotta get moving, but let's do this again soon.
All right. Thanks. Yep.
Thank you. That was U.S. Senator Tommy Tuberville there on the program. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porch Show on FM Talk 106.5. This I've come to know. So if you agree, have a drink with me. Raise your glasses for a toast to a little bit of chicken fried. And cold beer on a Friday night. A pair of jeans that fit just right. And the radio world. But like to see the sunrise. See the cotton on the roadside, cotton in the ditch. We all picked the cotton, but we never got rich. Daddy was a veteran, a Southern Democrat. They ought to get a rich man to vote like that. Singing song, song of the South. Sweet potato pie and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again. Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thank you very much for sticking with us. What's left of this Wednesday morning? We do appreciate it. I promised I'd get through a few texts here before we got through the day. Here we go. Moz, you wouldn't think fourth grade teachers and would want the literacy act so they don't have to teach reading and can do their jobs. Yeah, well, if you don't have any students because all your fourth graders have been held over to the third grade, Moz, you see how that's problematic. Tim, when you have kids that will not conform to learning and having their discipline in the school, cannot get support from their parents because they're non-conforming. There's nothing you can do with a child. That's what's going on now. It's a cultural problem. I don't know. School does school choice address that problem or not? Dame Inky, how about a new approach to education as a whole? How about going to school all 12 months? Other states do it. I think you'll get some pushback to that. Let's see here. Doesn't have Meta. Why do all the Auburn fans like to discount Alabama as sidewalk fans? Bama is rent hit free in most of the Alabama fan base's head. You know why we call you sidewalk alums? Because you didn't go to the University of Alabama. So I would say all Auburn fans that way. Auburn has its share of sidewalk alums. But there are a lot of Alabama fans out there that did not go to Alabama, yet they live and die Alabama. And there's just something to that. So if you take exception to that, I apologize, but it's a reality. And then lastly here, Jeff, thank you for taking my early comments. To clarify, teachers are unable to equally give students instruction when they must focus on two or three learning disabilities. Not fair to either the student group. The parent being involved, as you stated, is the primary issue. I think just from top to bottom there, named Texter, that the reason Alabama struggles like it does, it really has a lot to do with parental involvement. And just parents got other things going on, and they just look at school as a place to send their kids to babysit them throughout the day or whatever. There's a cultural problem there. I just don't think there's necessarily a government solution other than give them a better quality of life, and then maybe they become more invested. That biological imperative kicks in, and they become more invested in their children. But right now, that, you know, trying to apply a government problem to a social condition is maybe not going to work. Anyway, enough of that. Tomorrow, got Todd Stacey, some guests to be named later, as always. You could check out twitter.com/Jeff_Poor if you want to know who's coming up on the program. Try to do that sometime at the 8 o'clock hour. So keep an eye out for that. Anyway, enough of that. We'll be back at the home base tomorrow. Once again, a shout out to State Senator Chris Elliott, who let us use his office yesterday, and a House Majority Leader, Nathaniel Ledbetter, who has allowed us to use his office today. Very appreciative of that. We're going to try to get up here at least one more time before the session's completed, probably really soon. But we will be back. But you don't have to wait around or stick around waiting for Jeff Porter to where he may show up and do a radio show next. Who knows where that could be? But you got quality radio coming your way. Midday Mobile, Sean Sullivan. Sean, what you got for him?
I guess I will fill in the Don Sidewalk alumni Alabama fan portion. So
you are an alum.
Yeah,
you have that on your wall, right?
But somewhere. I don't. I think it's sitting on top of the safe at home. I don't think I have it displayed, but yeah. So I'm one of those. Yeah,
I'm
one of
those. You are a card carrying Alabama alum. You're not just
yes.
You didn't just show up at Walmart and buy a T-shirt and decide you're an Alabama fan.
No, I was. I've been there through the tough times, and it's funny. Stephen McNair, who does Moon by Minute, and I were talking about that the other day because he came after me at the University of Alabama. I was there at least for the '92 championship, and then things got really tough. So yeah, I didn't switch teams. It's, you know, Crimson Tide fan. Graduate, you know, that's so I'm that kind of alum. But listen, I'll take all the more the merrier. The more the merrier. I know that makes you crazy, but the more the merrier. Come on.
That's fine, and it doesn't make me crazy, but there is a distinction between the people that are involved with the university, attended, played a role, and it's just the people that are Alabama fans because daddy was an Alabama fan, granddaddy was an Alabama fan, great granddaddy was a, you know what I mean?
Mm hmm. It's tradition, don't you?
But it's different.
Why is it different?
it's a lot different because you're just not, you're just more of a fan than more of the, you know, more a part of the whole University of Alabama experience.
But what if somebody's the fans of pro teams? They can't have gone to, you know, the New Orleans Saint University. So.
But you lived in New Orleans. You grew up in New Orleans, perhaps. And I suppose you could make the analogy would be this. If you are, that wasn't your home team and you lived in Dallas, Texas, and you were a New Orleans Saints fan, I mean, it's kind of that same thing, right?
I don't know. There's people pick baseball teams from well away from here to be fans of, so I don't know.
I mean, you just grew up in this market, so you probably were a Saints fan. They were the team on TV.
But you're a big Braves fan, aren't you?
Right, and the same would apply to the Braves on TBS all those years. That was the only baseball game we could, professional baseball game we could watch.
That's true.
I went to Georgia. True. I mean, but that's not the case I'm making. Just so much of the Alabama fans. They don't, and I'm not necessarily saying there's anything wrong with it, but there is a difference between the two different parts of the fan base.
There we go. Coming up on today's show, it's going to be kind of a freewheeling show because Microsoft Word didn't save something for me, Jeff, like my whole show. So, but coming up in hour number two, Casey Calloway with the City of Mobile. We're going to talk litter. They are rolling out the different parts of this litter initiative. So we'll talk about that in the 1 o'clock hour. Coming up at 12:30, Cameron Smith from AL.com and the Triptych Foundation. And I had notes about a couple things. This Washington, it was the Washington Times story about lockdowns having little or no impact on COVID-19 deaths. We'll look at that, kind of. Also, I got a question. Isn't the Whoopi Goldberg question here? We'll get into some of that. And also, could we be sending even more troops to Ukraine? So that and a whole lot more coming up on today's show.
Well, y'all need to stay tuned for that. It'll be fantastic. Anyway, we will endeavor tomorrow. We'll be back in studio, and hopefully some of these technical hiccups where we were going through today. It's always tricky with remotes, as you well know, but we will be able to resolve them later on. But is the music playing? I can't
hear
it down the line.
Yeah, it wasn't in the right thing. So, yeah, we're wrapping it up. So just tell Phyllis.
Well, I got to get out of here, folks. Sorry, Phyllis forgot to say goodbye. I will try to do better again tomorrow. Y'all stay tuned for Midday Mobile, Sean Sullivan. This has been the Jeff Poore Show at FM Talk 106.5.
The past 2 years have been hard. I was so excited when I finally got the job offer. And then they told me I'd have to have a driver's license to get the job. I can't keep food on the table for my kids or milk in the fridge, let alone pay my tickets. If I can't drive, I can't work. Support the bipartisan driver's license bill and get folks back on the road. Workers Drive Alabama. When we're free to drive, we're free to work.
FM Talk 106.5 is Mobile and Baldwin County's number one creator of live local content.
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile.
Listen on air, online, and on demand. FM Talk 106.5. Turning up your voice. FM Talk 106.5. WAVH FM. Daphne Gulf Shores Mobile.